Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with a new deliverer. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. We have studied through the book of Judges and through 11 judges. And now we get to chapter 13, and we are considering the final judge, Samson. Today we will be discussing Samson Part 1, A New Deliverer, from Judges chapter 13. In verse 1 we read, "Again the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. So here we have another servitude, because once again the sons of Israel, the representatives of Israel alive at that time, they did evil, or the evil, in the sight of the Lord. And of course, the evil was idolatry. They worshipped idols instead of the Lord, Jehovah, their God, who had bought them to himself when he delivered them from the land of Egypt. And so the result of this is again the cycle of judges that happens again and again in the book, is that the Lord, when they disobey him, he delivers them into the hand, which means into the power. See, what's in your hand is in your power. You can hold it gently. You can try to crush it. You can throw it on the ground. It's in your power when it's in your hand. And so they were in the hand, in the power of the Philistines. Now, the Philistines, they were a nation that lived to the southwest of Israel, along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. They were Hamites, descended from Noah's son Ham, but they were not Canaanites, descended from Ham's son Canaan. They were Hamites from another one of Ham's sons. So these were the Philistines. Now their servitude for the Philistines lasts for 40 years, which is the longest period of servitude yet we've had in Judges up till now. And we have been adding up the periods of servitude as we've seen them in Judges. And here we have our last one. So first we had 8 years they served Mesopotamia. We add that to 18 years that they served Moab. The next, we add that to 20 years that they served Canaan. The next, we add that to 7 years that they served Midian. And next, we add that to 40 years they served Philistia. And 8 plus 18 plus 20 plus 7 plus 40 gives us 93 years of servitude. And as we have discussed, this is the difference between the years given in 1 Kings 6 and verse 1, where we read, "And it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the 4th year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month Ziv, which is the 2nd month, that he began to build the house of the Lord," that is, the temple. Well, we compare that to what Paul says in Acts chapter 13, when he says, "After that he gave them judges for about 450 years until Samuel the prophet. And afterward they asked for a king, so God gave them Saul the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom he also gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will.'" Now we see here that what 1 Kings 6 calls 480 years, Paul has 450 years, plus 40 years of Saul, 490 years, plus 40 years of David, 530 years, plus 4 years of Solomon, 534 years, plus 40 years of wandering in the wilderness under Moses, 573 years, plus about 10 years to take the land, 583 years. He has 93 years longer than 1 Kings 6:1 has. And we talked about the fact that the difference in this is that while they are serving the Lord, then God's timetable is moving forward. But during these years of servitude, when God sold them into the hands of their enemies, that these years, he said, "You are not my people. Lo ami, not my people." And during these years, we call those Anno Mundi years. That according to the world, the clock continued, of course, as it always does. But according to God, Anno Dei, the clock stopped. And it didn't move forward during these 93 years of servitude. So that Kings only counts the Anno Dei clock, the years when they belonged to the Lord and he hadn't sold them into the hands of their enemies. whereas Paul counts the Anno Mundi years, the years according to the world, including the 93 years of servitude. So we have this exact difference between Acts 13 and 1 Kings 6. So here we have the last 40 years to make up that 93 years of servitude. So during this time, Israel were again cast off and not his people, but now the Lord acts to save them. In verse 2 we read, "Now there was a certain man from Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children." So we are introduced to this man from Zorah, which means hornet. Now this was in the territory of Dan, but this territory had formerly belonged to Judah. When they first moved into the land, according to the book of Joshua, Judah took some land, but they took a huge portion of land that was far too much for a single tribe. So they had taken a part right out of the middle of Judah and given it to Simeon. But Judah still had too much. They took part of the original inheritance of Judah, and they gave it to Dan. Now this means it was in the southern part of Israel, because the land Judah took was all in the southern part of Israel. So Dan was down near the Philistines. Now some of the Danites, as we'll read later in the book of Judges, they didn't like that inheritance the Lord gave them, and they moved out of it and moved way up to the north part of Israel and took some territory for themselves that the Lord hadn't given them. But this is the original inheritance of Dan in the south. So this man is in Zorah, in Dan's rightful inheritance, and his name is Manoah, which means rest. And so this family, they have a problem, that is, his wife is barren and they have no children, which was very sad in Israel, because you had your inheritance from the Lord that you had to pass on to your sons. It was the most important duty perhaps in your life you had was to produce a son to carry on your inheritance from the Lord. But they're going to get a son from the Lord, as we'll see. So this is part of the tribe of Dan, and this is a rare high spot for Dan. Dan is the serpent tribe, described as a serpent by the wayside. And they are, if we would compare the 12 tribes to the 12 disciples, Dan would almost be the Judas tribe. They are a bad tribe. And as we'll see later in Judges, they are the first ones, it seems, to have gone into idolatry and to have led Israel in idol worship. Now, the other bad tribe in the book of Judges is Benjamin. But they later turn it around, at first with King Saul, and then they're the tribe who sides with the family of David when the nation splits, and they stay with David. So Benjamin kind of redeems themselves from a bad start in Judges, whereas Dan does not. And we get to the book of Revelation, and it lists the 12 tribes, and it doesn't list the tribe of Dan. Don't think that necessarily means Dan won't exist in the future, but they are dishonored in the 144,000 because of the kind of tribe they were. And in this way, they're kind of comparable to going all the way back to the sons of Israel. Levi and Simeon were the worst, and he kind of cursed them. But Levi turned it around when they were faithful to Moses, whereas Simeon never did, and they kind of got incorporated into Judah and almost lost their tribal identity. So Dan and Benjamin are the same way in Judges, but Benjamin redeems himself, Dan doesn't. But here we have a rare high spot for Dan, maybe the only high spot we have for Dan. They're about to produce the 12th and final judge. Verse 3, "And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, 'Indeed now, you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son.'" So the angel of the Lord, it says here. And an angel, the word in Hebrew means a messenger or an agent, the one sent from the Lord. And this is the angel of the Lord. And I believe that the angel of the Lord refers to the Lord himself in human physical form. And we would call this a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ. Before he was incarnate as a man, he appears many times in the Old Testament, and one of the ways he appears is as the angel of the Lord. Now he appears to the woman who is Manoah's wife. And interestingly, we never have her name. We only have her described as the woman and as Manoah's wife. But he appears to her rather than to Manoah. And he affirms what was obviously true to her, is that she was barren and had borne no children. But he tells her, now you're going to conceive and bear a son. God is going to turn this around and give you a son. Verse 4, "Now therefore, please be careful not to drink wine or similar drink, and not to eat anything unclean. So he gives her prohibitions while she's pregnant. And she is not supposed to drink any kind of wine or strong drink, any kind of alcoholic drink, and she's not supposed to eat anything unclean. Well, Israelites weren't supposed to eat anything unclean normally, not just when they're pregnant. But I think the angel means she is to be extra careful not to eat anything unclean. Verse 5, "For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." So the angel tells her that the reason for these prohibitions is this, that this child is going to be a Nazarite to God from the womb. Now, notice this, he's supposed to be a Nazarite. What does that mean? Well, Nazarite comes from the Hebrew Nazir, which means consecrated or devoted. And this was a vow that the Israelites could take called the Nazarite vow. We say, what was the Nazarite vow? Well, number 6 tells about it, starting in verse 1. It says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When either a man or a woman consecrates an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite, to separate himself to the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and similar drink. He shall drink neither vinegar made from wine, nor vinegar made from similar drink, neither shall he drink any grape juice, nor eat fresh grapes or raisins. All the days of his separation he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine, from seed to skin." So he says, when any Israelite wants to separate himself to the Lord, so the Nazarite vow again was consecration, devotion, separation to the Lord. Well, during this vow, he is supposed to drink no wine and no other alcoholic drink, but he's also supposed to drink no vinegar, or any drink made from vinegar, or any grape juice, or eat any fresh grapes, or eat any raisins, or eat any grape stems. He's basically not supposed to eat anything at all related to the grape. Then verse 5, "All the days of his vow of his separation, no razor shall come upon his head. Until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord, he shall be holy. Then he shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow." So he is supposed to not cut his hair the whole time he is separated to the Lord, the whole time he is a Nazarite. He's supposed to let his hair grow and not cut it until his vow is complete. Then verse 6, "All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. He shall not make himself unclean even for his father or his mother, for his brother or his sister when they die, because his separation to God is on his head. All the days of his separation he shall be holy to the Lord." So the third thing is he's not supposed to touch any dead body. And even if his mother or father dies, even if his brother or sister dies, sorry, can't go near them, can't go to the funeral, can't see them one last time, can't go near them, because he's got the vow of a Nazarite of separation to God on him. You say, wow, that's pretty harsh. That's pretty radical. Well, of course, if you're separating yourself to the Lord, it ought to be radical. It's not just like I've heard some people say for Lent, well, I'm going to stop chewing gum for Lent. Ooh, I'm sure the Lord's impressed. You're really separated in him, you're not chewing gum. Well, no. No, this is something meaningful. It's going to be hard for them not to eat anything to do with the grapes. That's a major part of their diet. And not cutting your hair, well, that was kind of shameful. Men always wore their hair short at the time. And not going near a dead body, again, if somebody close to you died and you couldn't go near them, you couldn't see them one last time, that would be hard. But it's supposed to be hard because you're separating yourself to the Lord. Now, this Nazarite vow, as far as I can determine it, could be used in two ways. You could use it to show your devotion to the Lord. You could say, to show my devotion to the Lord, I will be a Nazarite for 3 years. And then for 3 years, you would carry out this radical vow and show your devotion to the Lord. Or you could also use this vow to do something. You could say, I will be a Nazarite until I do a certain thing. So I'm swearing to do this thing, and to show that I'm going to do it, I'll be a Nazarite until I do it. I think Paul used the vow that way. In Acts chapter 18, we read of Paul in verse 18, "So Paul still remained a good while. Then he took leave of the brethren and sailed for Syria, and Priscilla and Aquila were with him. He had his hair cut off at Cenchrea, for he had taken a vow." What kind of vow had Paul taken? Well, what vow had to do with hair? It was the Nazarite vow. And what did his vow have to do with? Well, I think verse 21 gives us a clue. if we tie these two verses together. When he took leave of Ephesus, saying, I must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem, but I will return again to you, God willing. And he sailed from Ephesus. So he had to cut short his ministry in Ephesus, delay it, because he had to keep a feast in Jerusalem. Well, I think that must have been his vow. He vowed to keep the feast in Jerusalem. He was going to be a Nazarite until he kept it, and so he had to go. So there we see an example, I think, in the New Testament of someone keeping, the good Israelite, Paul, keeping this Nazarite vow. But here is a case, in Samson's case, he is supposed to be a Nazarite from birth. It's not his choice. Rather, his whole life is to be marked by a radical devotion to God. And that is to be shown by the fact that he is to be a Nazarite from birth. Never go near a dead body his whole life. Never eat or anything to do with grapes or drink anything to do with grapes his whole life. And never cut his hair his whole life. He is to be a lifelong Nazarite. Now notice the last thing the angel says is that he shall begin to deliver out Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. And this is interesting because the judges, they usually delivered Israel, period. Whereas Samson is only going to begin it. And as we go through the record, we'll see that Samuel will continue the deliverance from the Philistines. Then Saul will also continue it. And it is finally David who utterly defeated the Philistines and delivered Israel for good. But Samson only started the deliverance. Very interesting for the last judge. Verse 6. So the woman came and told her husband, saying, A man of God came to me, and his countenance was like the countenance of the angel of God, very awesome. But I did not ask him where he was from, and he did not tell me his name. So this woman, Manoah's wife, she goes to her husband and tells him what happened. And she describes the angel to her husband. Now she describes him as being a man of God who looked like an angel. So she wasn't sure that he even was an angel. She said, I think he was a man of God, but he looked a lot like an angel. So that was her report. And then she says his words, verse 7, And he said to me, Behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. Now drink no wine or similar drink, nor eat anything unclean, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. So she repeats the angel's words. Now notice how she repeats them. Is that she remembers the gist of what he said. She gives all the pertinent facts, but she doesn't remember his exact words. She doesn't repeat him word for word. And yet here in the Bible, the Spirit inspiring the Bible author gives an exact record first of what the angel said, and then of Manoah's wife's incomplete remembering, her incomplete memory of what he said. You know, if I was going to repeat something you said later, I would try to do the same thing. I'd try to repeat the gist of what you said, but chances were I wouldn't be able to remember the exact words you used. In fact, even quoting myself, I can't always remember the exact words I used. I just give the gist of it. And yet the Spirit remembers exactly. Now, I think this is interesting, showing us that this is God, not a man, writing this. Because if I was writing, and I said, somebody quotes what somebody said before, I would go back to what I wrote before as the quote and have them quote it exactly. I wouldn't have them quote it a little bit wrong from an incomplete memory. But notice that's what she does. She completes it factually correctly, but not in the exact words, like any person would naturally repeat. And yet the Spirit remembers exactly both. And that just shows us, I think, the Spirit of God superintending these quotations in the Scripture. Verse 7. Then Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, O my Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come to us again and teach us what we shall do for the child who will be born. So Manoah, it seems, wants to see this angel for himself. And he seems to think, as we look at his behavior, that after all, he's the man of the family, so he needs to take charge of this. And the angel ought to come to him, not to his wife. So he prays for the angel to come again and to tell them what they should do for the child who is to be born. Well, he'd already said that. He already found out from his wife. But he wants to hear from the man of God himself. Verse 9, And God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came to the woman again as she was sitting in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not with her. So God listens to Manoah's prayer, and he sends the angel again, but he sends him to her. Again when her husband isn't with her. Well, she's out sitting in the field, and Manoah's somewhere else. So the Lord sends him again, but he sends him again to her. Verse 10, then the woman ran in haste and told her husband, and said to him, look, the man who came to me the other day has just now appeared to me. So she runs to get Manoah, and tells him that the man has come again. Verse 11, so Manoah arose and followed his wife. When he came to the man, he said to him, are you the man who spoke to this woman? And he said, I am. So he comes, he hurries to the man, and he asks this rather irrelevant question. I mean, how many guys who look like angels are around? But he asks this guy, are you the man who came to my wife? Well, of course he was. And he answers, says, I am. Now, this sounds to us like the great I am of Exodus. But if you notice, for example, in the New King James that I'm using, they have am in italics. And that shows us that it wasn't in the original Hebrew. So this is not the Hebrew I am, like in Exodus. He's just saying I. It's like we would say, it is I, or it's me, we'd say using bad grammar, when you're affirming when somebody asks, is it you? Verse 12, Manoah said, now let your words come to pass. What will be the boy's rule of life and his work? So Manoah, more or less, asks to hear the instructions himself from the angel's lips. And he seems to imply by saying this, well, we are men, you and I, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We should be the ones doing business. Let's have a man-to-man talk. You need to tell me, the man, what the instructions are, not tell it to my wife. She's just a woman. But notice how the angel replies. He's having none of it. Verse 13, so the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful. So the angel has none of it. He more or less says, like I said to her. So much for a man-to-man talk. He says, I gave her the instructions already, Manoah. Verse 14, she may not eat anything that comes from the vine, nor may she drink wine or similar drink, nor eat anything unclean. All that I commanded her, let her observe. So he says, the instructions are the same. He gives the instructions again, and then again he says, just like I said to her. Verse 15, then Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, please let us detain you, and we will prepare a young goat for you. So Manoah wants to show this man hospitality and offer him a meal. And it seems that he's still trying to prove, perhaps, that he's better at this whole business of meeting a man of God than his wife is. After all, she didn't think to offer him to a meal, and Manoah does. But the angel answers verse 16, and the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, though you detain me, I will not eat your food, but if you offer a burnt offering, you must offer it to the Lord. For Manoah did not know he was the angel of the Lord. So the angel more or less says that he won't eat. So again, Manoah's idea is not so good. But he says that he will accept a burnt offering. But this offering must be to Yahweh, it must be to Jehovah. Now this is interesting. He says the offering must be to Jehovah. Well, does this imply that Manoah had offered offerings in the past that were not to Jehovah? Interesting. Well, all Israel had been doing this, so it wouldn't be surprising. But then the record points out to us the fact that Manoah still thinks this is just a man. He's not realizing that he is the angel of Jehovah. He is, as Hebrews 13:2 speaks of, unwittingly entertaining an angel. Or entertaining an angel unawares, as the King James put it. Perhaps the more well-known phrase. And he has no idea it's an angel that he's entertaining. Well, in this portion, we see that Israel again fell into idolatry. And this time they were enslaved to the Philistines for 40 years. But at last, Yahweh announces the raising of a new deliverer for them from the unlikely tribe of Dan. The angel of the Lord came to Manoah's wife, who was prepared to receive him. But Manoah wanted to be the one to receive the message and tried to take over. But we see that that didn't work out for him so well. Well, we will consider the rest of this angel's visit to Manoah and his wife, and the birth of the new deliverer, Samson, in our next study.
During Israel's 40-year oppression by the Philistines, God raises up another judge, Samson. Samson is marked out for God from birth as a Nazarite. This is the beginning of Israel's deliverance from the Philistines and their transition from having judges to having kings. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on a new deliverer. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Book of Judges with The Wonderful Angel. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that the more you study God's Word, the more you know and love God. We would like to invite you to the 2019 Word of Truth Ministry Midwest Bible Conference, held September 8th and 9th in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. The theme of this year's conference is the premillennial kingdom. We will discuss the different positions in the kingdom, consider the flow of the kingdom, and all of the parallels that the Bible speaks of that relate to the kingdom. Speakers include myself, Nathan Johnson, and other Bible teachers. We will be meeting at the Milwaukee Hilton Garden Inn Airport at 5890 South Howell Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The conference itself is free, but if you would like to reserve a room at the Hilton Garden Inn, call them at 414-481-8280. Mention that you are part of the Word of Truth Ministry Conference, and this will give you a special room rate. If you plan on attending, please RSVP the Word of Truth Ministry. Please email rustywoft@aol.com. That's Rusty, RUSTYWOFT @aol.com. Or you can write the Word of Truth Ministry at P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.